Hi, it's the Nerds at the Way We Nerd. I'm Danny Villalobos. To my left is
Kyle Bound.
Across from him,
Josh Moorhead.
And next to him,
Joshua Potter.
Yay, we're all here and we're here. You know what? I'm not even going to talk about anything else. We're going to talk about Batman vs. V Superman, all right?
Woo!
Because we all saw it. Two of us liked it a lot. The other two liked it a little bit. And had problems with it, and we're going to sit here and argue and yell at each other, and I'm going to slap down every one of their arguments, and they're going to slap down every one of mine and Potter's. So let's just okay. Do we want to start
anywhere?
Where do you? I mean, we could start from the beginning, from the opening frame to the.
Well, we should make
frame,
the pot as messy as the film is itself.
In the beginning,
this is a dream sequence.
All right, here. Actually, let me tackle this right now.
Hold on. One thing,
okay,
though.
Kyle's got something.
Yes. Spoilers.
Thank you.
If you haven't seen it and you are planning to see it, run. If you have not seen it and you don't want to see it and you just want to hear us talk about it, thank you. We appreciate your business.
But you should still go see it.
If you have seen it, welcome. Let's talk.
Yeah, let's talk. All right.
I think the other two will agree with me on this dream sequence thing. First of all, love the movie, but I had a few takeaways that I think could have been fixed. Dream sequence at the beginning. There are three superhero origin movies or origin stories that the general public, like all of us, know by now. One is Spider-Man. Uncle Ben dies. Shocker. Peter Parker has to then be responsible and take up being Spider-Man. Sorry.
Yes. And bit by a spider.
And bit by a spider. Right. Right. So we get
that's
that. We get Spider-Man's thing.
Yeah.
We know Superman's origin story, that he crashed to Earth because his planet blew up, and he was raised by normal country bumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know Batman's origin story. His parents were shot, he was pissed and depressed and moody, and decided to train to be a ninja and become Batman, become a detective, all of that. The ninja stuff, maybe not as much. So, for me, I didn't need the movie to open with his origin. I appreciate the way it was shot. I think it was gorgeous cinematography, and I think they shot it for 3D, and it was stunning in 3D.
Saw it in 2D, so maybe that's why
okay.
the whole
no,
pearl thing just
yeah.
felt really
but
weird.
That Snyder couldn't resist doing that, and I almost don't fault him for it, because the Bruce's parents being shot is like the Hamlet of your being a director now. Like, everybody
that's
wants
true.
To play it their way once. So that Snyder being like, no, this is how it looks. Nice.
There were pearls.
Slow. And of course, there's an important thematic and plot reason to hammer over the head.
Yes.
Well, we already said we're going to spoil, so you can say what it is, because that's the reason they did that, because the point of that whole sequence is, and they could cut out most of that if they wanted to.
They could cut out the entirety of that opening sequence with his parents. They absolutely could.
With the exception of mentioning the name Martha.
Yeah, but you can get that. Alfred can tell some anecdote that's going to be far
right.
better
it
than
it
was
Pa Kent's anecdote.
It was by
about
no means
drowning
necessary,
horses.
But it's another example of Zack Snyder indulgence and one of the least offensive ones for me.
Yes.
So,
it was
sure.
well done, except again, the pearls.
Yeah.
Getting caught in the gun was just, I don't know how that physically happened.
Exactly.
I don't know. But when it flashes back to it later when they're, you know, in the emotional climax of the film, that I was fine with. That worked wonderfully for me.
See, I would disagree. I get why they did it, and it does work as a takeaway there. Man, Dan's just over here stewing. man, I'm stewing. But
no, because you guys haven't even gotten to. I know where it's going to get worse. So
maybe
continue.
For me, that took me out of it. I feel like that was the plot servicing itself, and Snyder saying, "Oh well, this is how I set it up, so let's call back to this." But for me, because I know the origin and I know how this works, it took me out of the emotion of it in a way, because I was like, "Okay, intensity. Now we're going to flashback."
That was, but that was the opening of the movie. There was no intensity. That was the opening of the movie, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. Yes, but when they flashback,
right, he's talking
later,
about the
during the fight.
Oh,
that's that
took you out of
that
it?
Sequence.
It
is
did
not
a
the
little
problem.
Bit.
Like, we should spend this long on the
movie. No. I'm just really passionate about.
But then
it.
He starts floating up
yeah.
and he's narrating his own dream.
I'm just saying that, like, out of all the dream sequences and stuff, that's not the one to pick on.
That's fair.
It was totally unnecessary to have the weird one where, like, he's staring at his mom's tombstone and a man bat comes out of it. That has no context. That moment has no place, like, in a Batman movie, period.
That's fair. Other than to show he's tortured.
But
he's Batman.
They're not horror.
I mean, the whole movie is just showing him tortured.
Yeah.
Right, but there's more nuanced effect. They're not horror movies.
No, that's fair.
To me, that had no context. And in the big one, the Justice League pilot in the middle of the movie, has no reason to be there, does not really serve the story except to say, Superman's scary? But, and this is what I was telling Dan earlier, it works for us, maybe, because we're fluent.
Sure.
But if you don't
know which one you're talking about, Justice League pilot.
The post-apocalypse.
The dark side. The Flash stuff. In the middle of the movie.
Flash, yeah.
It works for us because we know the language, but one reason the movie ended up with 29% on Rotten Tomatoes is to the general audience or critic, that doesn't excite them. It's a big batch of what the fuck.
Which, I'm in that camp, because I don't know the ins and outs of every Superman bad guy.
Right. And I
don't know Justice League. I'm not an insider when it comes to all of that.
Okay.
I watched Lois and Clark.
Yeah, and Darkseid was not on that. Yeah. To be fair, I was only fluent from reading, obviously I'd seen Darkseid on the animated series and stuff, but I didn't know those were parademons. I only knew stuff from reading film blogs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't wake up and read a film blog every day, or if you're your dad, well, not your dad, because your dad's a nerd, but I mean, if you're one of our moms or something, it's a pretty broad concept. It's Batman versus Superman. That's something anybody knows those two characters. But if you walk into that theater as just a layman, you're going to feel raped.
I definitely did not feel violated in any way. I just felt confused.
It's a movie where even if you like, and there's a ton I like, there's just so much happening. That it's a rattle of the senses, I guess is what I was trying to say.
It's interesting you mentioned parademons, too, because I just watched the Justice League War animated movie on Netflix. And there are, I feel like they've borrowed a lot from that, as well as the comics and everything. So it was cool to watch that and see, this might be kind of the direction they're heading with the Justice League movies, which would be cool. But there's a deleted scene that Warner Brothers released that features what I'm guessing is a parademon or one of Darkseid's, underlings, with one of the mother boxes, the teleportation devices that allow
I don't even
travel.
Know what a mother box is.
Yeah. I didn't know that, until I watched the animated movie.
Except where I came out when I was born.
Exactly. Yeah, and that I guess is one of Darkseid's chief henchmen.
Yeah, yeah, that's what the trailer said.
But I wouldn't have known that either.
I wouldn't have either. Dan, I think might be the only one of us that would have known that. So, but I feel like if that had been in there, because it was another Lex Luthor moment, that might have helped some of that stuff a little bit. But at the same time, I don't know. It's a 50-50 thing for me on that. It's cool. It's a cool deleted scene.
I've got to be honest, the stuff that worked so well, and I was so enthralled watching it, that I can't say I dislike the movie. But when I wrap my head around why it's been rated so poorly, I can totally see it. Because if you told me to sit down and write a screenplay or structure a story, you wouldn't do it that way. There's dialogue that I liked, but I mean just in terms of how a movie's supposed to play out. It's buckshot. You know, that movie's a shotgun just going all over the wall. It's not as formulated as even the Nolan Batman movies.
That's a fair point.
Why I think they latched into it like they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it feels like, if I understand correctly, and please, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like what my understanding is two separate scripts, essentially, smashed together and sort of duct taped into place and losing some stuff, adding some stuff.
I thought
I don't know. There's a lot that just.
And Dan, correct me, but I thought it was always one screenplay. I thought it was always one screenplay that once once or one story idea that once Affleck signed on, they brought the Argo guy, Chris Terrio, on to punch up, which isn't that irregular.
No, punch up's totally normal.
Yeah, and that's, I thought it was more that.
It's, I'm going to say this. It's, I believe, and this is just my belief. I believe it's somewhere in the middle of what you guys are saying. I think that originally there was a Man of Steel 2 script that David S. Goyer wrote. And then they thought, hey, wait a minute. Why don't we bring Batman in now? And he was probably just going to be almost a cameo, maybe a 30, maybe the final battle would have been it and would have set up Justice League. But it was still Man of Steel. Still would have been Superman Clark Kent's story. Now, what they did was they brought Affleck on, and Affleck's like, fuck that, I don't want him just a cameo. Batman needs to be a bigger part of this if you want this to succeed. And he's probably right. Like, most people were excited about Batman before they even heard about Wonder Woman. We'll get to Wonder Woman in a second. So they came in with Chris Terrio, and then they wrote the Batman story, and then they just beefed up his parts in the Man of Steel story. But unfortunately, that took away something and just made it what it is, like you're saying. It was a marriage of two scripts that was... When it worked really, really well. And when it didn't, it alienated people who don't know it, like you said, as well as myself or Potter. But I just, to end on the dream sequences so we can move on to the next thing, because I wanted to listen to everything you guys had to say before I said anything. I understand, and this is their mistake for doing this, but the dream sequences, the Parademon one and the one with the Flash popping out of the screen, saying Lois Lane's the key, you were right about him all along, that is 100% setting up Justice League. And if you don't understand anything in there, it's gonna seem out of place until Justice League comes out, if hopefully they get to make it. I still have my doubts. It depends on the second weekend, which is, I think, why they scheduled shooting for 2 weeks after the movie, although they had to do press and stuff. But I think it's going to pay off well, because I think what the next storyline is going to be is that Darkseid is going to bring Superman back to life. He's going to be bad. The Justice League is going to have to fight him, turn him back, and then the second movie is going to be them all fighting Darkseid. If that's the way I would do it, that's the way they seem to have set it up. And I understand the dream sequences. And the funny thing is the dream sequences is the only time Batman actually shoots a gun besides the ones on his car. But Nolan's Batman shot off his car, and Burton's Batman shot out of his car. So mm-hmm. that's not. Yeah. Plus. One last thing about the Batman guns, and I'll leave it alone. If any fan out there claims to be a fan of Dark Knight Returns or the Alan Moore's brilliant The Killing Joke and are pissed off that Batman shoots guns or kills people, you need to shut up. If you haven't read those, you have a legit complaint. But
No. I've only read The Killing Joke. I don't know the first one.
But I'm just saying, Batman uses guns.
He kills once.
Batman, but you know what? In the original comics, the Bob Kane, Bill Finger original comics, he killed then too.
Sure, that's
good. And he used guns. So it's part of Batman's history. You can't get upset at that. That's not a good
complaint. You can get upset at whatever unless, you want. Dan may just ignore you.
All right. We will show you.
Batman was great. Like, there's so much that was great.
Affleck was a damn good Batman.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's the best. He's the best personification of Batman. He looks like Batman. He acts like Bruce Wayne. Like, this is the best performance of Batman Bruce Wayne. It is.
We might just, and this is the other reason I think it got bad reviews, for as much of it as I loved and that I really loved, we might just be getting to the tipping point.
I think, like, it's that too. I think it's superhero fatigue is finally set in, and now that this is setting up a whole new set of movies, the critics are like, right. Oh, fuck, we have to go through this again?
And not only that,
I kind of feel that way.
There's something.
And when I say critics, I just mean the critics. People. Go ahead.
Right.
Sorry.
People. There's something to the idea of, like, watching Infinity Wars after having spent at that point 12 years with these characters, and seeing that battle on a more colorful stage with it's a season finale. Mm-hmm. It's a series finale, as opposed to. I don't think that you're wrong about the plot that you just said that Justice League 1 and 2 may take, where Darkseid will arrive, he'll resurrect Superman, Superman will be villainous, and that didn't make me excited, that made me sad. Like, if I'm watching post-apocalyptic Justice League, and it's Batman and Wonder Woman in a bunker running away from, like, demons, that's not
I'm not fun. Saying that's going to be the whole movie. It's not, but
basically, the Justice League universe story is... The end of Act 1 is killing Superman and founding Justice League, in the broad overall story.
Right.
You know, so then instead of, I mean, has Marvel killed anybody yet?
Have we had an actual Civil War?
And I'm sure people will die.
None of the main Avengers are going to die because they all got to be in the new.
Is that true that the traditional like story to Justice League is forming after Superman's death?
I'm just saying that's the thing that starts the Justice League. That's the, you know.
I will say this though. I am, and we can.
No, I don't know the actual Justice League story.
Right.
We can get into the tone and the, you know, the character motivations and character arcs in a second. I enjoyed the fact that they killed off Superman. Actually, that was one thing that I was really happy to see them do, because I feel like if they hadn't, it would have been a cheap payoff for the audience. For me, like. If you want to argue the whole Team Superman versus Team Batman thing, just as a fun, you know, thing, I'm always going to be more Team
Dan's
Superman.
Drinking. He can't handle.
Dan's got in the bottle, guys.
My problem wasn't that they killed. My biggest issue with this movie isn't even necessarily the movie itself.
Wait, did you finish your thought?
No, it's an aside.
It's that it's this like movie happens battle. When it Better. Did. It's the second movie.
Yes.
You know, it's just too soon for this movie to happen.
I agree. If I had had it my way, and I feel like going back to the Man of Steel 2 script versus the scripts merging together, if I remember right, reading something, there should have been a Man of Steel 2. It was set up for that, and then because the first one underperformed enough or didn't do as well as they hoped, they decided to.
I don't think there was that much.
They were just in a hurry to get it started.
Well, no, I don't think there was a script in place or anything like that. I don't want to refute what you said.
Yeah,
because the story from the get-go is that Zack Snyder walked into Warner Brothers, and when they're like, well, Man of Steel made enough. It made almost $700 million worldwide. It had a $100 million opening weekend. Let's keep going with this. What should we do? And it's like, oh, we got Brainiac. We got this and that. And he said he had trepidations about it. It's a great marketing move, but he was like, look, I know you just finished this Batman thing, but I would like Batman to be in it. And they bid on it. And then once he realized that Batman was in this world, you could have everybody else in the world. So it just kind of expanded. I think this version of the movie was pretty much always the movie we were going to get, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. That's fair. But, and I wish they had waited then, because I would have rather have seen a Man of Steel 2 and then a solo Batman movie with Batfleck, and then we get Batman versus Superman.
Because of the arms race, they don't have the time to do that.
Right. Yeah, which is sad, because, and this is something that I've talked about with several people. I don't think I've talked about it with Dan, but I feel like with DC, the characters are, and this is no discredit to Marvel because I'm a Marvel guy first, DC has such special characters and such important characters that everybody knows. They are all of their characters. I mean, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, the Trinity, even Flash. They are A-list characters. What Marvel did setting up their cinematic universe is they took technically B-list characters. I mean, Iron Man and Captain America had kind of...
Cap is A.
I guess I'm talking about comic
sales. But there's something stunning about making a movie called Captain America and making it, a $700 million success worldwide. That was what they did that was so remarkable. They took the B-list and they made it A-list.
Right. And, yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Impalatable worldwide round.
And they've built their universe on that leading up to, and then
they built their universe on the strength of Iron Man. John Favreau's Iron Man.
Yes.
They
built the universe on John Favreau and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Yes. And that was a smart move.
Better pilot than a dream sequence in the middle of another
but
movie.
But this isn't the pilot.
Man of Steel is the pilot.
Man of Steel is the pilot.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. Well, so I feel like Man of Steel is like the prelude. Man of Steel is like the Hobbit to the Lord of the Rings trilogy that starts with Dawn of Justice.
Very interesting.
But so the whole like whiplash thing that I experienced with it is that not only does it do so much like rushing with bringing characters together and getting the Justice League before they set stuff up, but they almost did, they did so much rushing through like sacred nerd storylines. Like not just Batman v Superman fighting each other like Dark Knight Returns, but I was like shocked that, oh my god, they just nuked Superman and now there's Doomsday and oh my god, he's gonna die, isn't he? Like, they just poured everything into this, and that's what I mean by it being so much, much. Like, you get, like, if you are a big enough fan, it's like, oh my god, there's Lex is talking to Mercy. I remember Mercy from the animated series, and 20 minutes later, she's dead. Oh my god, that's probably Jimmy Olsen. He's standing next to Lois Lane with a camera. 2 minutes later, he's dead. Like, they just took what, in normal movie time, you'd spend years, like, kind of drawing out, and just went, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, yeah, no, I would agree. Here's my thought, yeah. And again, I honestly, I think definitely more than you two guys, maybe not as much as Dan, but I love the movie. I mean, it was epic, it was fun to watch, but realistically, again, you could have taken Batman completely out of it, given him his solo movie, and had this just be a Man of Steel movie with Doomsday as the villain still, because I thought that was great. That was a great second act for Superman.
Yeah, I disagreed with the people that said Doomsday looked bad. I thought Doomsday looked pretty badass.
I thought it looked great.
Doomsday looked good.
Because he needed to look kind of like Zod, and the way they did it, you know, you could complain about that, too.
He looked like a cave troll from Harry Potter on crack.
He did.
He was like, not Harry Potter.
Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Sorry. So yeah, you could have taken him out of that. You could have had more kind of evil behind the scenes machinations with Lex Luthor and had him be more manipulative and have Superman have to figure out, well, how do I fight this guy? He's basically committing domestic terrorism, but I can't fight him physically because that's going to make.
Well, that's what I mean. They sped through what would have been five superhero or Superman movies in one movie,
right,
where you get introduced to Lex Luthor in the beginning, and by the end, he's already in jail in Watts' corporation. You get, like, the whole thing's just like that. It's just
crazy. And like the stuff that if you make this just a Superman movie, the stuff that they then can take the time to make at least make a little more sense is the Africa stuff.
Yeah,
why was that Superman's fault?
Exactly.
Like, there's a bunch of people are shooting each other.
It just shows how stupid and how hook, line, and sinker we can swallow something just because somebody says it so. That's the whole point.
I would agree with that. And I think that works.
See, I don't think it works at all.
But not everybody. I don't think it works. But not everybody.
It's a bad. But not everybody. If that's Lex Luthor's plan, that's just a shitty plan.
Right. There's a lot of.
I hope people are going to super overreact because warlords killed people and then the CIA killed people.
It was just a scene, though. Like, it wasn't his whole plan. It was like, if that worked, then he put it in the
plan. Yeah, but that's the thing that's supposed to start turning people against him.
It is
weird. And then the second thing is blowing up the Capitol, which, again, like, there's. And some of these things have such easy fixes. Like, Superman saying, like, oh, I didn't see the bomb because I wasn't paying attention. It's just such a, like. It's a lazy explanation. Even just
well,
say
it's
like
lazy the well, way you say it. Even but the, just the line say, he delivered was way better than what you just said.
The fucking thing was made of lead. He didn't see a bomb in there because it was made of lead.
Well,
he
I
done.
Do.
He couldn't
well,
have.
Done. I do like. The, I do like that Superman.
But
lawyer.
That's not the point. The point is what Superman's going through emotionally. He didn't see it because he's too focused on
that's
what
scares
he's about
me.
To go through.
Yes,
because he says I wasn't even looking. It wasn't. I didn't see. He doesn't he say
this
I wasn't
Superman,
even looking for it.
This Superman is the one that people have been asking for. Everybody always says Superman's too perfect, too much of a Boy Scout.
I've never said that.
And now it.
Okay.
Well, not you. This one is flawed. This one is more human than any Superman we've gotten before.
I love him.
And it's I think, while like I said, your disagreements with the way they did it is founded. I think you're glossing over it when you say, "Oh, Superman just said he wasn't paying attention." Like it gives it more emotional weight if you deliver it the way Henry Cavill delivered it.
I really enjoy.
But I'm just saying it. I didn't because you thought of it practically, whereas I thought of it emotionally. That's my mistake in this.
No, that's the filmmaker's intention, and that's how I interpret it. And the Africa thing, it is poor plotting both on Luther's part and like a screenwriter's part. But that scene, for instance, they want you to make is like this is just like our society. Like they tell us anything. And we bite right into it without thinking it through. But maybe there's maybe a more deft way of doing that. I'm trying to play devil's advocate a little bit in that you make that inference and it makes you accept that Africa beat and a lot of other beats in the movie, but that doesn't mean that it was good.
Plus, let me explain why. The reason, and if you had to listen to the woman's speech when she's talking to the senator, she wasn't blaming Superman for the murdering of the whatever. She was blaming Superman because he came down and he was the shining symbol that came down and made these people all turn on the villagers and go out and kill them, and they were blaming Superman. So, you know, it's not. There's more to it than just them, these mercenaries blowing people away under Lex's orders, and then people blaming Superman. This woman's coming in and saying he doesn't answer to anybody, even not to God, which is the whole point. Like that's. It makes sense. Like to me, it made total sense.
No, and
I mean, yes, it could have been fixed a few ways.
I don't know. But that's the thing, though. If it's something that you can fix with a line or two,
why not?
Then it shouldn't be a problem.
And like, it wouldn't have the same emotional beat as it had here. You know, like that's what I'm saying. Like I know maybe it's over. It's over.
I'm talking about Africa now, not
I know not
the capital. Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking. I know.
I didn't think there was anything emotional about
because I'm talking about the woman,
the Africa stuff.
No, but the woman's delivery of her speech to the senator, that's where the emotion comes from. That's where you see the real people affected by what Superman does. That's the point of that scene. That's the point of the whole Africa stuff, and that's what Lex Luthor was trying to get into. He's like, all right, people are going to react this way because it's so easy to blame someone than just the situation.
Yeah, but the movie itself doesn't go into that at all.
You have to bring that to them.
If they did, it would have been even longer and overstuffed, as you guys are already complaining about. So I feel like some things we have to take
some of it out.
Some of them.
It is a smorgasbord of a movie.
I feel one like it's subtext.
Yes, it is subtext, and not everybody will read that subtext.
No,
if you rely on subtext, like in a novel or something, you have to be very deft about communicating it. And maybe this movie, because we're fluent again. We're able to bring that subtext right to the fore. But if I took my buddy Seamus to see it this weekend, who hasn't seen a movie probably in 6 months, he would have been like, what the Sam fuck was that whole thing? You know, like, I'm trying to see both sides of the coin here, because I really enjoyed it. But maybe it was too much. And to me, it's my biggest problem personally, not looking at, like, its place in the culture and the critique and everything right now, is that its tone was almost too much and too dark, because the moments that I love that made me like the movie a lot and possibly even love it, revisiting it, because there's so much I need to see it again,
right.
Is that those moments I would have never been allowed to enjoy if I was 9 or 10. If I'm a child...
Have kids.
Yeah, it's not at all. And like, it needs to serve that purpose too. If I wasn't allowed to see,
that's what Batman, they, if that's I wasn't what they allowed know Batman movies for,
yeah, well, no, but no, but that you could say that. But we all know from just seeing posters and trailers and pictures.
Tim Burton's Batman wasn't for kids. Kids saw it,
but more so, that those movies are acceptable. Like I wasn't allowed to see Batman Returns when I was a kid, but a lot of kids were. And this movie is like Clockwork Orange compared to like Batman.
Well, let me explain. When they made Batman Returns, which is by far the most superior of those four Batman movies, parents whined and complained, and that's why we got Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
But that's what I'm trying to draw.
I don't want them to make the movie you're talking about anymore, Josh, because then.
But the movie he's talking about is Marvel movies.
Yes, exactly.
That's what he's talking about.
Marvel movies, and this is Marvel and DC have always been two separate animals. And I understand you guys don't read the comic books, but Josh and I do. This is the way DC is. DC is very little fun, mostly dark.
But see, I don't read the
even
comics.
Even Superman.
But my experience with Superman has not been that.
Right.
My experience with Superman has generally been fun. It's been the original movies.
The
animated
series.
I didn't really watch
the
animated series.
It's been
Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
It's been Smallville.
But that's what I'm saying. They tried to do that with Superman Returns, and people rejected
it.
No,
that's not fair.
Superman Returns was number 3 in the original.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That they weren't doing the light fun that we're talking about. They were doing Donner, and I don't like Donner.
Well,
I didn't like those. Yeah, but I'm just like
I did.
And I'm not
like
saying
returns.
That you have
returns
to you have to give me fluff.
Not great.
But I'm just saying that movie should and could have been more palatable.
Well, I thought the thing about it is
you can make that movie
totally
the same story and have it so that a father can bring his son without his son having nightmares about like human trafficking for 2 months.
I do want to say really quick, sorry, quick aside. If you put Cavill in Superman Returns, it is a far better movie.
Yeah.
You just wanted to throw that out there.
I like the Cavill depiction a lot.
I don't think Ralph was the problem.
No. Here's my thing. You guys keep talking about like seeing the tone, not now that we're on it, the tone, the hope, the darkness, all of that. I got both and the whole way through. And it's partially because of Man of Steel, and I enjoyed Man of Steel. And you could argue that Man of Steel is a darker movie, and it is. It is, tonally, but there's still that underlying hope. You still see Superman, Clark Kent, whatever, come out of basically self-imposed exile to start helping the human race because he believes
in it. And you could take a kid to Man of Steel.
Yes, you could. Okay. You could. But my point is this. So the only reason that, in my experience, I've heard people argue that Man of Steel is dark is because he snaps Zod's neck at the end and that's not Superman and he doesn't kill. Honestly, that still shows me hope because while it is very emotional and it is very dark, he is hoping that the human race will treat him better and will treat themselves better than his own race, which is effectively he just ended it. So then that transitions over into Batman versus Superman, and you get him still trying to do the good that he can for the human race, and they still like him. And then because of one or two things, they start to distrust him and hate him. And even through all of that, he still has hope. He still has hope for the human
race. I dig all that stuff, man, and I followed it thematically, and I even poured even more into it, where Superman is still a symbol for America because the movie's about American power and restraint and being a picture of light in this world, but look what we do to terror. Like, I can put all that into it. But our boss on the show here, she didn't understand the first 10 minutes of the movie because that's what I mean by fluent. And you don't have to be that fluent to remember that there was a Man of Steel and that the city got destroyed. But to a layman, even somebody that wants to enjoy the movie, and she still enjoyed the movie, that stuff's not clicking because it's not as deftly presented.
Yeah, but nobody can, and I know you guys say you can, but nobody can jump into Avengers and know what the hell's going on.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that.
So I disagree. Avengers 1, yeah.
Batman v Superman is their empire. This is supposed to be their darkest chapter, and the hope and all the stuff you guys are talking about is going to come. It comes with Diana Prince, Wonder Woman, discovering the other metas, the discovering Cyborg and the Flash and Aquaman.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
And that's where the hope is. You're like, oh, okay. So
I disagree because that's what I mean. Like, I'm less excited about Justice League now because if it's a dark side story, that's a very oppressive like.
It is, thing. But it's gonna end. It's gonna end with them destroying Darkseid. The hope's gonna come back. Aquaman's movie is going to be lighter and brighter. They've already said
I'm
that.
Super psyched.
Flash here's my question. Here's, what's the order that these movies are going to go?
Wonder Woman takes place in 1990. Then Aquaman, then Volume 2, then Flash. Flash.
Okay.
So it's kind of weird.
So it's Iron Man, Civil War, Avengers Part 1, Thor, Avengers
that's
Part
what I mean.
2.
You really got to stop comparing it to Marvel stuff, though. It's just
I'm not comparing it.
No, it's a fair comparison.
But the people listening are going to hear that. That's what they're going to hear. You're going to hear, it should be like Marvel. If they made those movies like Marvel, I'd be pissed.
We're not saying it should be.
The way you tell the story. I'm going to jump into this Justice League movie with one character I know well, two characters I know well, because we're going to get the Wonder Woman prequel.
Sure.
And the rest of the Justice League, I'll be meeting there. That's a lot of people to introduce in one movie.
Well, that was the whole
This isn't introducing them. This is showing you
showing
a playing card, and then you're supposed to turn
you
into the baseball game and love the players.
And hopefully, they're doing it different. Like I said, they're doing it different.
It's not different. None of us. I don't think any of us are saying that they need to make mirror images of Marvel. We're trying to illustrate the point. Of that it's an arms race, and they are rushed because they're trying to do everything that Marvel's done since 2008 at one time before this bubble burst. And the risk of doing it like that is that in trying to beat America to the moon, you might just build a rocket that blows up instead. That's what we're saying.
Boom.
We're not saying that. We're not saying that they have to be tonally the same or the same kinds of stories. That's besides the point. We're just saying they're doing a lot at one time, and it's risky.
Yeah,
I hope it succeeds personally. Like, I want more movies. I want more Justice League movies. I mean, it'll be really cool. I want them to redeem Green Lantern because that one was pretty awful. Yeah. But and I want to see the Flash. I want to see Ezra Miller as the Flash, even though I love Grant Gustin on the TV show. So good. He is Barry Allen, like hands down Barry Allen. But just the little bit that we got in BVS was great, and I want to see more of that. So I really hope the gamble works, and I hope that fans go see these movies and it makes
them
money.
I'm with you. I hope it works. I hope that I watch the Justice League movie and I'm like, why the fuck did I ever doubt this? Like,
right.
Okay, they know what they're doing.
Well, I don't think you have to worry because as much as I love this movie, I don't think Justice League's going to happen.
No, you're being...
No.
It's filming next... What are you talking about? It's filming next week.
We're going to talk about the next pod, how they canceled it. Or they pushed it back.
I would...
I'm telling you right now, man.
My life on the fact that...
I hope so, Josh. I hope you're right, because I want this universe to continue as it is.
Warner needs it.
So
yeah, well, that's the thing.
And Wonder Woman's going to be a huge hit, and I think...
Oh, absolutely.
We talked about a bunch of the negatives. How about we just go to the positives now before we end up?
I loved, and I saw a lot of people shitting all over this, which so it amuses me when the critics shit over something that I love in a movie that I didn't love.
Yeah.
I loved that opening sequence with Bruce Wayne driving through Metropolis. That was great.
Wait, they were shitting on that?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, I read something talking about how, like, this is Snyder's fuck you to, like, Warner Brothers, because this is the thing where he's killing people that they can't take away from him. Like, it's just, there's some nuts shit that's about it.
I love it.
I thought it was great, though.
What makes that scene so awesome is everybody running away from the danger and Bruce Wayne sprinting into it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that just shows you
who he is. The one weird thing, and this was probably just the theater I was in, and I thought it was weird, when the horse shows up. There was like a laugh throughout the audience. And
I laughed too, actually. I didn't know what that horse meant either. Like, I was like, why is that horse there? Like,
9/11.
It's just
9/11. Just 9/11.
Wait, is that something that happened in 9/11?
No, it's just jarring imagery. But
it's just a horse without a rider. It's like a police horse, no rider.
It's another thematic subtext thing.
I forgot about that until you said it right now.
And I liked that moment, but it did get a lot of chuckles. I thought that was... That was interesting.
I don't remember getting chuckles on the screen. We got chuckles in the second one I saw.
Okay.
The second screening I saw.
Yeah. I love that sequence. The dinner party was... there's little weird things. So, like, even when I'm talking about the things I like, I have to, like, why is Clark Kent covering sports and society?
Well, he's not supposed to be.
And that's just a fucking shitty question.
It is, but he's not supposed to be. If you remember, Perry White's yelling at him later. He's like, why the hell are you going to cover this?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to.
Well, he's like, you didn't bring me the sports story. You didn't even bring me the story about that.
Yeah. No, I love Perry White.
What I did like, though, in the White background of that scene, when he's like, go cover the game on the TV, the football game that's on is Gotham versus Metropolis.
Yeah. And I think it's
like, foreshadowing!
The score was like 63 to something. I remember I saw the score. I was like, why is the score so high? Unless they're supposed to be indoor football.
That fight against Doomsday was awesome.
Wonder Woman's great. Their actual fight is amazing. Contrary to all my Devil's Advocate shit, like, I pretty much loved everything. Like, I was like, but like,
I'm gonna do another Marvel comparison to that fight. The way, and it's not even a Marvel comparison, it's a Joss Whedon comparison. Okay. The way in the first Avengers movie that Joss Whedon had the fight go was each character doing their thing.
Yeah.
And you saw the character in the way they fought and in the things they did in
the battle.
And
then the joy of them
and
pairing
up. And you 100% got that.
Yeah.
I mean, the best chemistry the three of them had together, and I guess it's really the only time the three of them were together, was fighting. Like, they had amazing chemistry as a team fighting.
I
so cool.
I teared up when the three of them were standing there next to each other, and Wonder Woman's out there in the front. And I loved Wonder Woman's musical cue like that.
Oh,
I don't know what that was, that instrument they were using for it, but it was like, it sounded like an Amazon
primal,
it was so cool. And I loved when she gets tossed and she has a big smile on her face.
Yeah.
She wants to get right back in the fight.
Gal Gadot, I can't wait for Wonder Woman.
She's so good. All in of the naysayers can shut the hell up.
In the little, I don't think there was, that's the thing about it, I don't think anybody disliked her.
There were critics. I didn't see anything.
Even the critics.
I saw people that had issues with, like,
just shoehorning her
motivation and the way she was put in there, but I didn't see anybody say, like, yeah, Gal Gadot's not a great Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I guess it was more nerds on message boards.
No, they might have been talking about the way she was handled, and I understand that and everything, but, the one I wanted to bring up is, as Josh pointed out, the most polarizing performance, Jesse Eisenberg.
Which I really enjoyed.
I loved him as
Here's the thing, though. They totally cheated. They just were like, you know what works really well? That Joker. Let's just, what if he joked around? Like, he was doing Heath Ledger. Like,
what if we down see to the, how the Joker became the Joker?
Down to, like, where, and I enjoyed it, and I liked the performance, but down to where, like, the last calculation of the movie is like this moral puzzle he's put your heroes in.
Yeah, but the thing is, Lex Luthor always was kind of a mad scientist to begin with. Like, but he became a billionaire philanthropist or whatever he became later on in life. Later on in the comics. But he always was kind of that maniacal.
Yeah, in my head, he's always the guy who's going to drop two people off of two separate buildings and say, good fucking luck, pick one.
Right,
That's what Lex does. And I can see what you're saying. Like, I think they did have the thought that Eisenberg is going to Heath Ledger. I even used that phrase. I said, Eisenberg is going to Heath Ledger this bitch, in the sense that he was going to bring something new. And I loved Jesse in this movie.
I liked it that he was new, too. He
wasn't as dark.
Yeah, I should have been. No, yeah, he was the levity.
Even compared to Joker. Like, Joker was a much darker humor.
Yeah.
I guess I should have been more fair. I don't think Warner
Brothers. You almost feel uncomfortable laughing at some of the Joker's things. You're like, should I be laughing at this?
I don't think Warner Brothers gave a dictate that he had to be Joker. But I think Jesse Eisenberg was like, I'm going to go super eccentric with this. Because the Luthor because I don't like the Gene Hackman Luthor. Yeah. I don't really like the Kevin Spacey Luthor, like, except for when he's serious. Because to me, Luthor is like this serious, powerful.
My favorite Luthor is Smallville's Luthor.
Yes,
like Michael Rosenbaum to me played the quintessential Luthor. Like, and Eisenberg didn't take much from him, but I love the moments I loved about Eisenberg's Lex is when he's just teetering on the edge of freaking out and killing stuff. Like, he wants to strangle the senator when they're talking in that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And just when he's like his cheek twitches.
It was
like
a great performance.
Very subtle. Yes. It was very subtle.
But I guess I can understand why it's polarizing, but Josh had a really kind of fun. Josh Moore had a really fun theory about.
I
wouldn't mind this.
Yeah, I was. I think they left themselves some wiggle room because I was reading today about, like, how he never says that, like, his dad is dead, and he keeps emphasizing his dad, which I think is just a thematic choice. Like, oh, look, he's the other side of this coin to Batman and Superman's parents' issues.
Yeah,
but they could, in the later movie, be like, well, here's Lex Luthor, as you've always known him, the Lex Luthor that started this corporation. We gave you Alexander Luthor, who's like Nouveau Luthor.
Yeah.
But here, now look, there's both of them. Yeah. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Well, which would be awesome.
And they could cast Bryan Cranston, because I don't know if you guys knew this. This is crazy. And this shows, I really like Zack Snyder, but this shows, like, how going with whatever he's feeling he is.
I think I know what you're going
to
say.
They brought in Jesse Eisenberg to play Jimmy Olsen as stunt casting, so that when he walked into that scene, you go, oh, my God, Jimmy Olsen. And then they shoot him in the head to show how serious they are.
Yeah. We're going to get a star.
But
which would have been more effective.
After he came in, and they said just the way that Eisenberg talked to Snyder in the interview, he turned to his wife, his producing partner, after he walked out, and he goes, that's Lex Luthor.
Yeah, we should see.
And they had already, like, they'd been pursuing Bryan Cranston. And I think that's why there's rumors at for a time that Cranston was Luthor, because that's the direction they're going to go. Yeah. And then they just retconned the whole thing. But I'll put a pin on my personal review of this movie, since we're talking about the good things. I think it's less of a movie and more just like a party. Like, a lot of things happened. Some of it was awesome. Some of it was like, huh? What was that? We'll talk about it forever.
You're sort of jumping from conversation to conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not quite picking up everything,
like,
that's going on.
It's an experience.
That's funny. One of Josh's awesome analogies.
But, like, for the rest of forever, we'll, like, talk about it and be like, yeah, I remember that. But it's, you know, it's not a movie like Force Awakens is a movie. It's not. It's just this.
Don't compare this to Star Wars. No, but
I just pulled the first like well structured. Oh, this is very obviously like it was. Just,
although I'll tell you this, some people will probably say the same things about Force Awakens that we're that the negatives were saying about BVS. We'll disagree with them till we're blue in the face. But
it was a fun true. Party. Some bad things happened. I like maybe I wanted to throw up afterwards, but like because I drank too much because liquor is good. Like that's what I mean. So it's like this confusing like explosion of an experience, which is both good and bad.
Yeah,
it was a thrilling experience in that theater to be certain.
Yeah,
there's times where I was like, "This is a little too dour," but that's like being at the party and seeing the person that
we had a good crowd too that night. I mean, everybody was screaming and yelling. Everybody was really into it,
especially when Wonder Woman appears with her bracelets just ready locked.
I loved her using the using the lasso around Doomsday.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I loved the moment when Batman's fucking car's destroyed. He's about to get hit. He's just like, shit. Yeah. I don't remember the exact line. Yeah.
He said that. He goes, shit.
And that was an Affleck.
And he's just like,
that was an Affleck ad-lib.
That was a great
ad-lib. That was a perfect ad-lib, yeah.
Honestly.
It humanized Batman that moment where you're like, okay.
All Batman of his lines as Batman were great. When Luther calls and he says something to the effect of, I'd rather come punch you in the face. Or
that was awesome.
Like that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my goodness, this is so good. The fight scene too when they're all trained on the window and he pops up through the floor,
mm-hmm.
it's like watching someone play Arkham City or Arkham Origins.
That might be like the best
Batman. So good.
Yeah, it was
like,
better than any of the fight scenes in the Dark Knight trilogy.
Agreed.
By the way, I love the Dark Knight trilogy. Yeah. When I say stuff like that, I am not ripping on Christopher Nolan.
No.
But that scene, I just want to say one thing about that scene that bugged me so much. So fucking much. It's the tiniest thing, and I apologize, but it bugged me so fucking much. At the end of the scene, he says, I'm with your son. And she says, I think she says, I figured.
She said, I figured that. Something about the cape.
I figured.
Something about the
cape. The cape.
Yeah.
She didn't need to say the cape. She should have just said, I figured, because that was a great line. But she says the cape. It's such a small thing.
I could see where that could work
just,
or fall flat. Yes, it just felt.
It just like I was laughing so much at the first part because it was awesome.
I didn't even hear the second part.
And then she said the cape, and I'm just like, wait, what?
You know what's awesome about Man of Steel in this movie, in comparison to any other Batman or Superman movie we've ever gotten, is that we're finally getting them as action movies like you wanted to see when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, Nolan's movies were great storytelling movies, but he was never a great shooter of, like, hand-to-hand action.
No,
he could do a wide shot of a semi-flipping, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But, like, watching Batman do what he did...
That scene was awesome. That just makes me really excited for Batfleck the movie, and I really and it sounds like he's working on it with Geoff Johns with some big news today. Even though they didn't say it was that, but apparently he's working on something with Geoff Johns. I can't imagine it's anything else.
I would hope so.
So
especially if it's Geoff Johns.
But so obviously to wrap this up, that Batman v Superman is a very polarizing flick. I urge you, even if you haven't decided to go see the movie, if the reviews have turned you out, you have to go see it.
Absolutely.
Have to see it for yourself. But also, read some of these reviews that are bad. Most of them are saying kind of what Josh and Kyle are saying, although they liked them a little more probably than some of these critics. There's some critics, I'm sure, flat out hated it. But there's some, if you read into it, they're like, okay, there was things that didn't work, and they were just a little bit more glaring than the awesome things that did. But for the most part, it is a cinematic experience that you need to have. Like, it's a gorgeous movie. The music is Hans Zimmer's, probably one of Hans Zimmer's best. I have to go back and listen to all his scores, but it's the best of all his superhero ones. And he did the Dark Knight trilogy and he did Man of Steel, which I thought all those were brilliant. But this is his best one, thanks to Junkie XL as well, to give credit, because Junkie XL also was a big part of it. So, Kyle, you seem like you had something to say.
No.
Oh. You're reared up like you're about
just,
to fire.
No, I'm just sitting here. I mean, if you're gonna see it on the big screen.
Yeah, because it's
gonna,
especially IMAX,
it's an experience.
Because if you see Doomsday on IMAX, looked fantastic.
Oh yeah,
and he looked still good on the smaller screen I saw, because I saw it at the NoHo 7, which is about as small a screen as you can get in the theaters nowadays. But it's still effective. And the fun thing was the people in our theater, the theater I was in, it's a very artsy theater, and you could tell they were artsy people. But people still clapped at the end of it, and I was kind of excited about this. So there are people out there that are digging it.
Yes.
It's not universally hated like some people might be saying in their headlines.
Yeah.
But
it did experience some of the gang-up culture that we live in.
That, too. I'm really...
I do have my problems with it, but I think some people are being unfair about it.
Yeah.
Give it a few days, though. There'll be a backlash to the backlash.
Right. This is what I hope. I hope my pessimistic attitude, thinking that we're going to get an announcement that it's canceled or it's delayed until they find a new director, I hope I'm so wrong, and I hope Josh is so right, because I think once the Justice League movies come out, Zach's going to fix the problems that he saw here. Because he hears what people are saying. He tried to fix what he did wrong with Man of Steel. You know, how many times did you see in this movie where a character had to say, that place is deserted, there's nobody there? Even Batman says it. Batman is the best one. He said, well, I'm going to take him to the port, it's deserted right now.
My favorite is Anderson Cooper's, though.
Anderson Cooper's, yeah.
But then the next shot, like, all the lights downtown are on, and there's cars everywhere.
but no lights in the building.
Oh, my God. I forgot about this. See, there's so much in the movie that I forgot about this until right now from seeing it in the theater. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
Love Neil deGrasse Tyson.
So basically, I was joking with somebody here at work earlier that it was a perfect marketing ploy on behalf of the studio. They're like, let's make it so big and so confusing and blow through so many plot lines that even if you hate it, you have to see it twice. Like, so.
Good call. Well, I'll say this. I liked it just as much, if not more, the second time, and I even teared up at the same parts. So it was just.
I will go see it again.
I just, I hope we get all these movies that they're planning, because once it's all done, I don't think it's going to be the Marvel machine, but it's still going to be a pretty good score for Warner Brothers.
Okay, wait, Dan.
Yes, sir.
What's your mom's name?
Donna.
Okay, my mom's name's Kim, so apparently we can't stop and be friends. We have to keep talking about this movie.
And awesome!
But you know what? The fact that you have a mother makes you a human just like me, Kyle, so I feel for you.
Aww. Wait, Kyle, you like ham sandwiches too? I love ham sandwiches.
Okay, I just, it was a cheesy moment, but it was not like, the, like, I like strawberry ice cream too moment.
Yeah, Josh likes to say. This is the only thing I like about that, is the fact that in all the years I've been reading these comic books, knowing both of their mothers' names are Martha, I never put that together.
Yeah. That's why I thought that was a really neat twist, because how am I such a dummy?
Yeah, how did I not notice that?
Is that exactly
anyway,
what
all right. So that's going to do it for our BBS pod, and we have an interview with a gentleman who worked on the 1978 Superman. So check out that'll be an additional pod, a podling, if you will.
Ooh.
And you know, check back next week, because we're going to premiere the Escape Pod, celebrating the release of Star Wars The Force Awakens on Blu-ray. Yay!
Yeah.
So we got a lot of big stuff coming up next week. But until then, I am Daniel Villalobos.
Kyle Bown.
Josh Morin.
And Joshua Potter.
We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening. If you want more from the nerds, check us out on the inner tubes at thewaywenerd.com. And if you haven't already, you should follow us on Facebook and Twitter at thewaywenerd, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, this is The Way We Nerd.